Today, the Scottish voters preparing for another referendum on independence, and Saeed Avarsi on Islamophobia in the Conservative Party. In 2014, Scottish voters were asked a simple question. Would they like their country to become independent, yes or no?
The silent majority will be silent no more.
There is going to be one simple, straightforward question.
My view is that you ask the constitutional question once in a generation.
That vote split Scotland down the middle.
We could win for independence!
As people confronted their nation's identity and future. In the end, a majority voted no.
We've lost. Fair enough, we've lost. By a big margin.
While the noise of that campaign may have quietened in the years since, the enthusiasm and determination of pro-independence campaigners has never subsided. The Guardian Scotland correspondent Libby Brooks met some of them recently at a meeting on a dark evening in Fife.
I threw myself through the door and there was a cup of tea waiting. The 11 people who were waiting to make me introduce themselves.
My commute to work was always 45 minutes and it always really annoyed me that the podcast finished 10 minutes before I got to work.
I will pass it on. And it was a really interesting mix of folk, all age groups, men, women, gay, straight, and they had all come together to talk about the kind of country that they want to live in.
That's one of the things that I love best about the idea of our new Scotland.
Mm-hmm. It did remind me that on the 20th of September 2014, the Yes movement did not just sort of pack up and shrug its shoulders and go away.
Independence is far from fading away. Once again, it is a big election issue, and with the Scottish National Party topping the polls north of the border, leader Nicola Sturgeon is now offering voters a new referendum. The uncertainty around Brexit has provided an opportunity for old questions about Britain, Europe, and Scotland's place within both. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, will this election bring Scotland a step closer to independence? Libby, you reported on the independence referendum in 2014. What do you remember of that time?
It was incredibly challenging to try and report what was really history on the move.
Do you know how many people they're saying are here with us today? 30,000 people!
There were all sorts of crazy hand-clappy things about the Yes campaign too, and I was there covering the flash mob Cayleys in Glasgow's George Square.
Flash mob Cayleys.
We need sets of four couples for a traditional style strip the willow.
Are you trying to tell me you've never been to one of those?
I've lived a very sheltered life. I've never been to a flash mob Cayley.
It's basically using social media to organise an emergency dashing white sergeant. It was a very vibrant campaign. The Yes movement was a lot broader than the SNP, and so you had all of these different Yes groups springing up all across the country, people who previously hadn't been talking about politics either because they weren't interested or because they believed that it wasn't going to make any difference.
What were the SNP actually promising?
The main SNP prospectus for independence was that Scotland should be able to make decisions about how the country is governed from within that country.
That independence is the right road forward for Scotland.
It was reflecting a huge frustration that many people in Scotland feel about Westminster.
It's the reaction of the powerful few who believe that they always know what's best for the many, that power should be in their hands.
And the fact that oftentimes governments in Westminster are not the party that Scotland has voted for.
Making the case for independence, as the First Minister Alex Salmond, and making the case for the union, is the leader of Better Together. Alistair Darling, please welcome them.
At last, the world is hearing the voices of the real people of Scotland.
On the other side of the referendum, there was a much more softly spoken Scot, Alistair Darling, fighting for no. How did that campaign differ?
Alistair Darling had this phrase that he used quite regularly about Alex Salmond promising a land of milk and honey after independence.
We cannot make this decision on the basis of guesswork, fingers crossed, or his blind faith.
And in many ways, I mean, the Yes campaign as a whole was able to do that simply because people didn't know essentially what was going to happen after an independence vote. And so that was sort of part of the point of it, was to imagine a wonderful social democratic country.
No one, absolutely no one, will do a better job of running Scotland than the people who live and work in Scotland.
Because of that, the Yes campaign was always characterised as the heart campaign, whereas the No campaign was about the head. It was about the people who were anxious about future economic circumstances, for example.
Because they cannot come up with convincing answers on the key things that matter, like the currency we'd use, like what would happen to our pensions or defence.
And No ended up really concentrating on those practicalities.
In the end, there was an incredibly high turnout, almost 85%. No won 55% of the vote and Yes won 45%. What do you remember of the mood across Scotland the next day?
I remember going into George Square.
I've never felt so patriotic in my life.
On the morning after the referendum, and there were still a few stragglers there.
This fire will never be quelled, ever.
Drinking from a few cans, and the mood was very flat.
A little after half five here in George Square, and the crowds are thinning out. Recognition that the result is a no. But
let's also say people were also hugely, hugely relieved, and I think you can't underestimate that quiet relief that, you know, the 55% who had voted no were feeling as well.
It's a great result in Edinburgh, it's a great result across Scotland. Brilliant.
Hours after that referendum result came in, Alex Salmond resigned as First Minister.
The campaign continues and the dream shall never die.
And he was replaced by Nicola Sturgeon, which was also a hugely significant moment.
Hi Scotland, it's Nicola here. We're about to kick off our Westminster campaign.
Three things happened in the immediate aftermath of the no vote. First of all, David Cameron came out onto the steps of Downing Street.
Good morning.
And instead of being a gracious winner, he started talking about English votes for English laws.
And now the millions of voices of England must also be heard.
Then people started joining the SNP. I remember being at a rally that Nicola Sturgeon held in the December, and you could see the ticker and the numbers were just going up and up and up. And the third thing, what that campaign did result in was a really substantial long-term increase in the level of support for independence. You know, it was around 23% or so at the beginning of this decade, going up to 45% in that campaign period. That's pretty extraordinary, and that has sustained, obviously.
What happened in that 2015 general election?
I mean, I guess essentially what happened was that all the people who had previously voted yes to independence went out again and voted yes to the SNP. And Scotland changed colour and went yellow.
The people of Scotland have spoken, and the people have placed their trust in the SNP to...
What happened alongside was also this wave of adoration for Nicola Sturgeon herself. I can remember reporting on campaign events, people crying because they had got selfies with her and, you know, sort of elbowing out the way to get close to her. She was just absolutely adored.
And then in 2016, Brexit happens.
The British people have made a very clear decision to take a different path.
How did Scotland vote in that referendum?
Scotland voted to remain in the EU by 62% to 38%, which compares with 52% to leave for the whole of the UK.
Well, I think an independence referendum is now highly likely.
People expected there to be a Brexit bounce in terms of how people felt about independence, and there wasn't. But I think what did happen after the Brexit referendum was that the pro-independence outlook and the pro-EU outlook became kind of more intertwined in voters' minds. And so the effect of Brexit on feelings around independence, I think, has been a lot more gradual.
With that converging of pro-EU sentiment with yes sentiment, perhaps after the Brexit referendum, did that mean that the SNP were pretty confident going into the 2017 election that their independence message would do very well?
In the snap election of 2017, the SNP then made a calculation that they were going to very deliberately tie independence to Brexit. And that actually spectacularly backfired.
So Alex Salmond has been defeated in Gordon. The Conservatives have taken that.
They lost a good number of their MPs, who went down to 35 in the Commons. The Scottish population were saying that they weren't ready for another independence referendum at that point. It's really only this summer that we have seen a marked increase in support for independence, and it's now averaging around 49%. It is interesting now talking to these people who have made that shift from supporting remaining within the UK in 2014 to the possibility of being independent but within the EU in 2019. And I spoke to one woman, Elizabeth, who had made that shift just over the last few years, very much because of the Brexit vote.
Well, I voted no in 2014, primarily because I was concerned that Scotland would no longer be in the EU.
Elizabeth was originally from the United States, but she's been living in Scotland for several decades now, and she runs a small soap making and cosmetics business near Falkirk. And it was mainly for economic reasons that she wanted to remain in the UK in 2014.
We export 70% of what we sell to the EU. And so it was very frightening to me that that we might not be in the EU anymore. And then 2 years later, this Brexit vote happened.
The situation has now completely changed, and what she's looking at is an EU that seems very welcoming toward the possibility of an independent Scotland. And she just feels that actually, in terms of business sense, that is the best way to go now.
For me, it was like being locked in a car with a bunch of crazy people. Independence is asking me, do you want to stay in that car with the crazy people, or do you want to make a leap? Okay, I'm going to jump out. Now, am I going to survive it? That becomes more attractive than hitting the wall with the crazies.
Nicola Sturgeon and the SNP are really capitalising on this feeling of uncertainty that we hear from voters like Elizabeth. And as they go into the general election, they're making the promise of a second referendum central to their manifesto.
Well, you're absolutely right. Independence is front and centre of the SNP's election campaign. It's a much stronger message than it was in 2017.
This election is the most important of our lifetimes.
When Nicola Sturgeon really launched the party's election campaign last Friday,
the future of our country is at stake, not just for the next 5 years, but for the generations to come.
And the message that they're giving out on the doorsteps is that voting for the SNP is the best way to stop Brexit and to lock Boris Johnson out of Downing Street.
I call her the boss. You know her as our absolutely wonderful First Minister of Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon.
And I was at the pro-independence rally that was held in Glasgow a couple of weekends ago.
There is no doubt that Scotland stands at a crossroads
moment.
That was very significant because it was the first time that Nicola Sturgeon had spoken at an event like that since 2014. The mood was really buoyant there, despite the fact that there was a much smaller pro-union contingent who were trying to drown out proceedings by blowing whistles really noisily.
And my message and my challenge is this. I'll debate either of you. I will debate both of you anytime, any place. So stop running scared and come and justify why Scotland should not be independent.
But it's really crucial to keep in mind that for all of those independent supporters who are celebrating a shift in the polls, there's still around half a nation who don't want to be asked again their thoughts on leaving the UK. And that's what the pro-union parties are really counting on in this election. If you look at the Scottish Tories' latest billboard campaign, it features a mocked-up image of Nicola Sturgeon with her fingers in her ears, and the tagline is, "She won't listen, so tell her again."
And yes, the Conservative Party have seats of their own to defend in Scotland. And last week, Boris Johnson was in Scotland tasting whiskey.
Well, I vowed what to drink in Scotland.
And you managed to speak to him, Libby. What was that like?
These sorts of situations are always incredibly awkward, particularly when Boris Johnson has been visiting Scotland of late. He's done these very controlled visits where he doesn't actually speak to any ordinary people. He'll perhaps do a tour of a distillery as he did last week.
Sorry, how are we?
Or the time before that I spent with him, he was in Faslane nuclear facility. You can't really get more secure than that.
You're sat down there, sir.
Okay, I'll go.
So it's not the most conducive atmosphere, it has to be said. But we all were challenging him as to why it was that he traditionally was having these visits in secure locations away from the general public.
I've met many, many Scottish voters in the course of my time as Prime Minister and look forward to meeting many more.
Where have you met them?
Loads of times.
And he was insisting that he'd met many, many Scottish voters, you know, over the time as Prime Minister.
When have you actually gone to a public place?
You're a voter, aren't you?
No.
You know that, doesn't
that's not true.
And obviously it's in that sort of personal interaction when he's looking you in the eye, essentially trying to deflect from the fact that he doesn't have an answer to the question.
Boris Johnson is also adamant that he won't allow Scotland a second independence referendum, will he?
That's right. That was one of the things that he really doubled down on during the visit last Thursday. He said that he was not going to grant the Section 30 order powers to Holyrood to hold a second independence referendum.
The people of Scotland were told in 2014 that if they had a referendum, that there would be a once in a generation thing. They were promised that solemnly, I think, by all parties.
And also, and this is key, regardless of whether the SNP win a pro-independence mandate in the Holyrood elections in 2021.
And the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, has said he doesn't think a second referendum is a good idea, but that he wouldn't rule out the possibility of allowing one to happen. Boris Johnson reckons this is just a ploy to secure Scottish votes. But are Labour keeping their options open in case they need the SNP support in Westminster?
This is one of the big questions for this election up in Scotland. Jeremy Corbyn, John McDonnell, and indeed the Scottish Labour leader Richard Leonard have repeatedly said that they won't do deals with the SNP in order to get into Downing Street. But it's really impossible to say what kind of conversations are going to happen after the 12th of December.
What are polls showing in Scotland? Do people there really want independence?
I'd say that the polls are roughly around 50-50 now in terms of people who want to remain in the UK and people who want to leave.
And away from the politicians, what are people saying about this?
I don't know about you guys, but I can't remember the last time I seen a no sticker.
Talking to the activists about the people that they are talking to, sort of on the street or in the stalls when they're leafleting, they are very sure that increasing numbers of people are at least entertaining the idea of voting for independence in a way that they weren't previously, in a way that they certainly weren't before Brexit.
We went to somebody's door and they had a yes sticker in the window, and we got talking to the lady about the referendum in 2014, and she said, oh no, I voted no, but I'm yes all the way now because of the way that Westminster is just totally disregarding Scotland. To go from being a no voter to actually actively having a sticker in your window, mm-hmm. that was a really powerful moment for me.
One of the guys there, Stefan, was talking about the sorts of yes voters that he's encountering now.
Yes voters come from all backgrounds. I'm an SNP member, my husband is a Green member, mm-hmm. and that's something that the mainstream media very rarely mention, is that they do come from every party. If you're yes, you're not necessarily SNP.
He says that pro-independence support came from people on all sides. But we know that the last referendum was really divisive. What do they think would be different a second time around?
The sorts of activists like the ones that I met in Fife have been doing a lot of thinking about mistakes that were made during the last campaign.
It's about making sure that we take the no voters with us mm-hmm. and go, look, we understand why you voted no, we voted yes. There's a process now and we've now got to go on that road together.
So it feels like you were saying that reconciliation is going to be very near the top of the list.
Yeah. On, I think it's going to have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the other interesting things, actually, that that group brought up was the question of if there is a successful yes vote, what happens afterwards?
Even if they do get an independence referendum, is Scotland guaranteed a place in the EU?
I don't think there are any guarantees about anything at this stage, but certainly the noises off are very positive in terms of the potential for an independent Scotland to come back into the EU. I think particularly if the vote were to happen within the 2-year transition period, so that sort of not too many separations had been made.
I can't help thinking, Libby, that for voters in Scotland, who since 2014 have voted in 2 referendums and now, well, will be 3 general elections, there must be an element of fatigue. Do you think, through your reporting, that you found there is an appetite for another referendum in Scotland next year?
I think, as with all of these things, it depends on who you're speaking to. So there is a cohort of voters in this country who have become incredibly politically engaged since the 2014 referendum. Many of them are on the pro-independence side and thus have a huge appetite for another referendum. There's also a sort of probably similarly sized cohort of people who are scunnered with the whole thing, who feel that they have made their decision clear in 2014 and don't want to be asked again. And I think there are also a group of people who, and this might sound peculiar, but who I think are feeling increasingly disenfranchised, actually, despite the number of times that they're being invited to go and make their democratic choice at the ballot box, because regardless of what they're saying, they feel they're not being listened to. And so there is, I think, a fatigue setting in as well amongst some people, and an anxiety as well about division. And so I think that's one of the big challenges for independence activists, is how do you show that an independence referendum would be done differently to the Brexit one?
Libby, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rachel.
You can follow Libby's reporting on how the general election will play out in Scotland at theguardian.com. Coming up, questions over the Conservative Party and its handling of Islamophobia. Now, this week, The Guardian revealed that 25 former and current Conservative councillors had posted Islamophobic or racist material on social media, putting pressure on Boris Johnson to hold an inquiry into Islamophobia in the party. Last week he confirmed there wouldn't be one before Christmas. The former Conservative Party chairman, Saeed Abbasi, says it's time her party took the issue seriously.
For somebody who's
grandfathers, both maternal and paternal, served in the British Indian Army, who were prepared to lay down their lives to protect the freedoms and the country that we have today. For somebody who's now has a family history of being in the United Kingdom for over 60 years, my grandfather came here in 1958. I am tired of waking up every day having to satisfy some sort of a loyalty test because there are bigots and racists among us who are demonizing and othering me simply because of the faith that I was born into. As a woman of colour, I've tackled and faced and fought racism all my life. And sadly, each generation brings its own form of racism that it has to fight against and challenge. And sadly, now, the growing form of racism in this country is anti-Muslim racism, Islamophobia. And sadly, it's not just found on the streets where women have their hijabs pulled or are sworn at or spat at, but actually it's found in civilized settings. It's found in political circles, in think tanks, in the media editorial rooms. And it's why now nearly a decade ago, I said that Islamophobia had passed the dinner table test. Basically saying that it's found in the most respectable of settings. It is Britain's bigotry blind spot and remains one of the most prevalent and acceptable forms of racism within our country. The latest place where, sadly, Islamophobia has been found has been within politics and particularly the Conservative Party. And it's why for the last 4 years I've been challenging, initially privately and then more recently publicly, challenging the party to have an inquiry and to root out this form of racism amongst our rank and file. And I thought that during the leadership election, we'd made some progress when all the leadership candidates committed to having an independent inquiry into Islamophobia.
Do you all agree, guys? Should we have an external investigation of the Conservative Party into Islamophobia?
Absolutely.
Do they all agree? Rory, do you agree? Excellent, so, they agree.
Okay. But unfortunately, the party has since then started backsliding again, trying to avoid having to deal with this issue.
I asked you about a promise you made. You specifically, let's be clear, said in terms, we will have an independent inquiry into Islamophobia, full stop.
And prejudice, not
you didn't.
Full
I have the transcript
stop.
In front of me.
Michael, when you have a particular problem, you need to have a particular inquiry. If you don't have a particular inquiry and you want to dilute it to make it more generic, then what you're saying by default is that you don't take this issue seriously and it's not important enough to be to merit the attention that it deserves. I think there's no doubt that certainly within my party, the issue of anti-Semitism within the Labour Party has been weaponized. And the reason why I say that is because if my party was genuinely concerned about racism, if my colleagues who have quite rightly called out the Labour Party on the issue of anti-Semitism were genuinely anti-racist and wanted to fight racism wherever they found it, then they would start by rooting it out in their own backyard. And what astounds me really is that the very colleagues who have been most silent and least supportive on the issue of Islamophobia within the Conservative Party are the colleagues who are most vociferous and most vocal about anti-Semitism within the Labour Party. I don't recognise the party around me. It has changed. Often people will say to me, you know, how did your love affair with the Conservative Party end? And I say, well, it's not my love affair with the Conservative Party that's ended. It's that the party has ended its love affair with its commitment to staying in the centre ground of politics.
That was Saeed Abbasi. Thanks to her and to Libby Brooks. Today's episode was produced by Hannah Moore and Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Kakutier, and the executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll see you tomorrow.